Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
Welcome into Big Time Baseball. Tony Gwynn Jr., John Heyman. Got a great show lined up for you. Bobby Valentine will join us today. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy this interview. He is one of the best characters, people we've had in our game. And I truly believe you will sit back and enjoy this. Obviously, we got a lot to cover. Dodgers are the World Series champ. We got a preview of all of the end of the season awards. So let's get into it. Remember, you can follow me at Tony Gwynn Jr. on Twitter. Same with John Heyman. You can follow him at John Heyman. And now you can follow this show on Twitter. Follow us at RDC_BTB. That's Big Time Baseball. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review Big Time Baseball on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. John, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited. We got through a season. That is terrific. Absolutely fantastic. And let's pat ourselves on the back. We both picked Dodgers in six. So let's not leave that out. It was Dodgers in six. And I'm not saying we picked the long shot, but we picked it exactly right. So good job by us.
Yes, good job. Good job by us. And listen, the storylines out of this series, we'll get to Blake Snell being pulled in my mind, he was definitely pulled before he should have been. But a couple of the other storylines, Julio Urias ends up playing a starring role, not as a starter, but out of the bullpen. Clayton Kershaw put together two really good starts in the World Series that kind of quiet the chatter down a little bit. Dave Roberts gets over the hump. And lastly, the Moneyball versus Instincts. Let's start there, John, because Blake Snell is rolling through this game. Different than he's looked in any start in the playoffs. I would guess better than he's looked at any point during the season. Not a lot of good swings off him. There's a line drive single. Kevin Cash couldn't get out of the dugout fast enough to bring in Anderson out of the bullpen. From that point on, the game changed. The Dodgers put up two runs that inning. They'd add some insurance, and they walk away the World Series. And Kevin Cash, John, he had to answer some pretty tough questions after that game.
Absolutely did. And I will say this about Kevin Cash. He had a terrific season. He's one of the finalists for Manager of the Year. I think he probably will win that award. I think he probably deserves that award. He did a great job to get a team that was 28th in payroll to within two wins of the World Series championship. So it's been a great job for him. And this is the way they've done it all along. I don't know whether it's completely a script, but Snell never pitched in a seventh inning all year, and 5 2/3 tied his high for the innings for the year. And, you know, that's the way they do it. And I do see that people were saying that his stuff was going down, that the spin rate was going down. The velocity wasn't quite there. He had a couple pitches in the low 90s. For me, I'm looking at their ace. I know that the guy is quite a competitor. At that point, he had 9 strikeouts, 0 walks, only 2 hits. Barnes had just singled, and the biggest thing, only 73 pitches. I would have stuck with him. Beyond that, Anderson, who had been their best reliever during the season, had not been very good lately. So, you know, I'm not sure that was the right move either. So I do think there was reason for questioning Kevin Cash on that move.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, I watched every pitch of that game, and I just cannot get over the fact that the swings that I saw from the Dodgers in that game, even leading into that inning, there was nothing that indicated to me that they were about to start getting to Blake Snell. I know you had the single up the middle, but it just didn't seem like that was should have been an indication that he should come out the game. Nevertheless, Kevin Cash makes the move. You get, I believe it was a double and then a wild pitch. And next thing you know, the game is tied. Or excuse me, the game is now in the Dodgers' favor. And as I said, they would go on to win that game. Julio Urias.
Yeah, you know what? I was going to say one more thing on that, Tony. Mookie Betts and some of the Dodgers players had even said they were happy to see Snell out of the game. You know, they were 0-for-6, the top 3 hitters, and their 3 best hitters, Turner and Betts and Seager, 0-for-6 with 6 strikeouts. Muncy, the 4th hitter, was 0-for-2 with a strikeout and a tap back, and they were quoted as saying right after it that they were thrilled that he was out. And beyond that, I know Dodger people who in the organization were just texting back and forth and watching the game. They were all thrilled to see Snell out of the game. So, you know, it was a questionable move, but, you know, you can understand why the Rays stick basically the way they do it, because it's part of the reason they were there in the first place. So I can't kill them, but I wouldn't have done it.
Listen, there's a clear plan for the Rays, and they stick by it. And the evidence is that, as you mentioned, Blake Snell had never thrown that many innings really all season long. They have steadily taken him out. As you mentioned, he hasn't got to 6 inning mark all season long. So it's not a stretch to say that wouldn't happen in a World Series, and that's exactly the script they followed. And you're right, to a man, whether it was Mookie Betts, I heard, Dave Roberts, Cody Bellinger, they all said the same exact thing. We were happy, thrilled to get him out of the game, because I think, as Bellinger said, he was disgusting out up there on the mound. So it's certainly something that the Rays and the players, from a standpoint, will have to live with, you know, moving forward. Now, on the Dodgers side, a couple good storylines. Julio Urias, who has been one of their young upcoming stars for quite some time, really got a chance to be on the big stage, and he performed well. It wasn't as a starter, John. It was as a reliever. He gave them some quality innings and was the pitcher that got to be on the mound to get the final out in that World Series.
Yeah, I think going in, they saw Urias as behind Gonsolin and certainly May in their kind of mind. And they adjusted, and give them credit. Urias, this is beyond analytics now. He had that look in his eye, and, you know, he really wanted to be out there. Some guys are just big game pitchers. I mean, obviously, we know Smoltz and Schilling and Bumgarner, they love it. And, you know, they're great on the big stage. And Urias just looked like that guy. So, you know, I give Dave Roberts credit, one of our former guests. And I think we now do a great job of picking the games. We do a great job of picking the guests, and they seem to be very fortunate to be on, because whatever guests we picked, they all made the playoffs, and we had Roberts on, and he wins the World Series. I think, you know, he made the great call to do that, to go away from Kenley Jansen, their closer, their high-priced closer, who'd been their guy, and or anybody else, and to go to a starter, and I think it was just a great call by Dave Roberts, and it was good to see him make that call.
Yeah, and that goes beyond the gut. That's just the eyeball test. You saw Urias a couple nights before come out, pitch well, and you knew after Kenley had the tough loss that he had to deal with in Game 5 that they likely weren't going back to that well. And for Urias to step up the way he did, was a big moment for him. I look for him to make a big step next year because of this. Now, the other storyline, John, is Clayton Kershaw, who has been getting hammered over the past few years for his postseason struggles. I have fought back on that argument for quite a while because in years past, I think we mentioned it on the show, John, Clayton has had to pitch longer than maybe he should because there was a lack of trust or a lack of depth in the bullpen in past postseasons. That wasn't the case this year. And I think because of that, he benefited. He got to pitch up to the max of where he probably should, and then came out and his bullpen was able to hold down two leads for him. And because of that, he had a really good postseason this year, pitching, throwing the ball very well, John.
Yeah, I'm with you. He had a great season, and it was a shortened season. Maybe that helped. He didn't throw his usual 200 or so innings. You know, I do think I'm with you, really. I think your call is correct. I think part of the problem was not just the fact they didn't have a deep bullpen. It was managers, and they've had very good managers. Joe Torre, Hall of Famer. Mattingly, who we had on, who's fantastic. Dave Roberts. I feel like they defer to him. You know, I just felt like they didn't want to take him out. I mean, he's the leader of that team. He's a strong personality. And, you know, I don't know what was in the back of their mind that they figured they'd be criticized less. I don't think that's it. I think it's more that their relationship with Kershaw and their belief in him and overbelief, because if you look at his record, it's not too bad in the first six innings, but when you start the seventh inning, he's got like a 7 ERA going forward in the postseason. I also, you know, the Houston thing was not fair because they obviously cheated. I think St. Louis, the way they killed him so many times, they must have figured out something about the way he was tipping pitches or something. They were good, but I don't think they were that good. So I think it was a little bit of a bum rap. You know, he'll never be seen as a Bumgarner or Smoltz or Schilling, but I think this put to bed a lot of the back talk about his not being a big game pitcher.
You know who his numbers stack up with? They stack up with guys like Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine in the playoffs. And we don't even talk about their postseason flaws. We only talk about them as great pitchers. I think Clayton Kershaw will be in that same boat when it's all said and done. The last storyline for the Dodgers is Dave Roberts. I remember doing the show with you last year, John, and really unsure what the direction was going to be for the Dodgers after they got bounced out of the playoffs by the Nationals. It didn't seem like there was a lot of faith in Dave Roberts, which I thought was crazy, but he ended up getting over the hump in this crazy pandemic season, which you could argue was just as tough going through 162 because of the things you had to deal with as a team. He gets his team all the way through, and he finally gets that championship ring he's been searching for.
Well, managing is just such a tough job, and there's so much pressure on the manager with the kind of conceded to be best team or the team with the most talent. And I mean, I'm not the only one who was picking the Dodgers year in and year out. I mean, they, on paper, they look fantastic. I mean, the last couple of years, they look like the best team. I don't know if we'd say that before that, but they certainly were among the best team. Then that stretch of not winning the World Series. I mean, of course, it's not like the Red Sox or the Cubs breaking the jinx, but it's hard to believe that they've had such a good team, and they've won 8 straight division titles, and they hadn't won a World Series since that incredible 1988 season with Oral Hershiser and the Kirk Gibson with the home run, and they've gone 31 seasons in a row and not gotten the job done. Now, Dave Roberts is only there for the last few, but I do think the pressure was on him. I don't think that people in L.A. are any more relaxed than anywhere else. I think that is a misnomer. I think that he's got a lot of pressure, and he handled it well. And it's good to see such a good guy get what he deserved in the end, because he is a very, very good manager. You know, it's just so much pressure. I mean, we just saw Rick Renteria get fired after being one of the three finalists, or actually before. Now we know he's one of the three finalists for AL Manager of the Year. It's not an easy job. So, you know, give him credit. Good job by Doc.
Yeah, well, you know, you segue into the next part of our show here in a sec, but I think we got to talk about what's probably considered the only low light of the World Series, and that was Justin Turner stiff-arming the security to celebrate after testing positive for COVID-19. Caused a lot of stir, John.
Yeah, a very good guy who's done a lot of charitable work and is great in the clubhouse. Very good guy, very, very bad decision. I mean, I know the MLB people sternly warned him, as they mentioned in their statement about the situation, not to go on the field once he's COVID positive. And he did go on the field, even had the mask off briefly. He's surrounded by people. He's in the picture next to Dave Roberts, who had beaten lymphoma one time. I know he's beaten it. It's not probably on his foremost on his mind now. But, you know, I get that Turner had waited decades, really, literally, to be in this situation. And what a disappointment it must be to find out in the middle of the game that you're COVID positive and you have to be quarantined instead of on the field celebrating with your teammates. You know, maybe he thought that was, I don't know. He certainly didn't want to miss the moment, but the reality of it is, you know, millions of people across America have missed big moments. We've missed weddings. We've missed all sorts of celebrations. Many things are missed. School, people aren't going to school. And, you know, they told him to stay in there, and he should have listened. He clearly did the wrong thing there. So there's no other way to look at it, really.
There isn't. I certainly sympathize as a former player, though, who never reached this pinnacle. How that must have made him feel when he found out that he couldn't. You know, it's almost – it's a selfish – I get it. It's a selfish act. But I do have sympathy for him in terms of working that hard to get to this point and then not being able to actually experience it. That would be devastating. But you're right, John. The right thing to do would have been to stay in the area that they had him and just keep everybody and their family safe. But something he'll have to work through over this offseason. All right, let's move into the next part of our show. After one of the best parts of the end of the season is we get to find out who will be the guys who take home the hardware for the season awards. We have our finalists, AL MVP finalists. We got Jose Abreu, DJ LeMahieu, and Jose Ramirez, who had a torrent second half to put himself on this list, John.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jose Abreu. He's basically been my pick throughout. I know Tim Anderson nominated him halfway through, and Anderson was clearly a top candidate. He still is a top candidate, even if he isn't going to be in the top three. Abreu, if you look at the numbers, I mean, he was dominant in all sorts of categories, fantastic. I know he's a leader in that clubhouse. The White Sox made that step that we all thought they could make, and I think he's a big part of it. To me, it should be Abreu. We'll find out next week whether I'm right, but that's my pick. Where do you think, Tony?
I'm right there with you. Jose Abreu looked like he put himself in some of the best shape he's been in since being in the major leagues, and it showed. It showed well. He swung the bat well. He was the catalyst for that offense, and I agree. We're going to move through these pretty quickly because we got quite a few to get through. NL MVP finalists, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Manny Machado. Now, remember, these are regular season awards. Keep that in mind. Who you got, John?
Yeah, you know what? Marcelo Ozuna and Corey Seager had fantastic years and didn't even make the top three. Maybe they're 4 and 5. So, I mean, obviously Machado and Betts were fantastic. We saw Betts in the postseason. You know, I got to go with Freeman, though. I thought he made the biggest impact. And certainly in this year with COVID, where he started out where he had it and, you know, at some point thought he was in big trouble with the COVID. It came out and, you know, to me, he had the big hits and he was the best player in my mind anyway.
I agree with you. We are 2 for 2 on the same page. Let's move to AL Cy Young finalists, Shane Bieber, Kenta Maeda, and Youngjun Ryu, two former Dodgers on this Cy Young Award list for the AL.
Wow, that just shows you how deep the Dodgers were. And we know David Price also opted out, and obviously they traded Stripling. They still thought they had so many pitchers. Obviously, Ryu and Maeda were fantastic, but Bieber's obviously the Cy Young winner. So I think we're going to be 3 for 3 at this point.
Yeah, Bieber, I don't think this one's really that close. I think Bieber was that good this year. He definitely deserves. Now, the NL Cy Young, I think, is going to be a much closer race. You got Trevor Bauer, Yu Darvish, and Jacob DeGrom. John, who are you going with on this one?
You know, I can't tell you, Tony.
No, that's right. You're not.
Jack O'Connell, you don't want to. If I told you, I'd have to kill you. No, Jack O'Connell would be banging on my door. So I'm going to defer to you on this one. That's my vote. That's the vote that I had, so I can't reveal it until they announce it next week.
Yeah, John is an actual voter on this one, so he cannot actually tell us who he is. I'll tell you who I like. And this is, might not be the most popular vote, but I think Yu Darvish is deserving of it. I thought the way he bounced back, the year that he put together with the Cubs, when you look at his numbers, he's right there. He's right at the top of the list for a lot of these things. It's either him or Bauer. And so, obviously, I think it's going to come down to one of those two guys, but I'm going with Yu Darvish. All right, let's move to AL Manager of the Year. This one's a little bit weird. Kevin Cash, Charlie Montoya, and the recently fired Rick Renteria of the Chicago White Sox, all Manager of the Year finalists. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, Renteria did a good job until the end. Montoya, fantastic. They didn't have a home, give him credit, but I thought Cash was the Manager of the Year in the American League.
Now, did Cash win it last year?
I think he did. I don't recall. I think he did.
I always feel if he ended up winning that last year, I always feel like that is an uphill battle to win it back to back years. And for that reason, I'm gonna say Rick Renteria ends up getting this award.
Wow!
It will be certainly a little awkward considering that he is no longer the manager, and I can't think of another one, at least in Major League Baseball history, where a manager has won Manager of the Year and also been fired in that same season. So,
I'm not sure that's happened. I looked it up. Rocco Baldelli was actually the Manager of the Year. Cash was third last year. But, wow, that would be something. If Jerry Reinsdorf can hand him the award, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if Rick would want to take it. But if Cash didn't win it last year, he's probably the odds-on favorite to win this year. All right, let's move to the National League. Don Mattingly, David Ross, and San Diego's own Jace Tingler. Who you got, John?
Well, we had Jace Tingler on, and he did a nice job on our show. But Mattingly has got to be the guy. I mean, they had 18 guys with COVID. He told us they would be a contender. I think you snickered, if I recall correctly.
I did.
And I was thinking of it. So, and he delivered. So he's incredible. Just a great, great all-around guy for baseball. Mattingly is the NL Manager of the Year.
Yeah, I would be a true homer if I told you Jace Tingler. Although he is deserving of being in the finalists, the year that Don Mattingly put together with that Marlins team, with the COVID outbreak that they had to deal with, and still got them into the playoffs and got past the first round, took out the Cubs. Not that that matters in this vote, this Manager of the Year award, because it's, a regular season award, but I'm very fond of Don Mattingly. I think he's deserving of this, and I think he will win this Manager of the Year award in the National League. All right, AL Rookie of the Year. Christian Javier of the Astros, Kyle Lewis of the Mariners, and Luis Robert for the Chicago White Sox. Who you got on this one, John?
Yeah, I thought it was Robert, but he finished 11 for 81. That's a rough finish. Lewis didn't have a great finish either, but and both are fantastic defenders. Very similar seasons for the two of them. I'm going to give it to Lewis by just a hair. Very close, but I think Lewis was a little more consistent offensively.
Yeah, both Lewis and Robert hit that kind of rookie wall there at the end, it seemed like. But I think Kyle Lewis did enough damage early, not only offensively, but defensively. He was a force to be reckoned with for that Mariners. I like Lewis as well. NL Rookie of the Year, you got Alec Bohm, Jake Cronenworth, and Devin Williams, who was literally unhittable during the regular season.
Yeah, they're all different cases. They're all excellent cases. Any one of the three could easily be picked. I'm going to pick the guy I think is probably going to finish third. That'd be my guess. But I just thought, as you said, he was unhittable. I thought he was extraordinary. So I'm going to go with Williams. Cronenworth was in a pennant race and did fantastically. And Bohm, I mean, looking at how he affected games, even though they didn't win that many games, he was pretty darn good, too. And Dustin May was good as well. He obviously wasn't in the top three. But I'm going to go with the Brewer reliever who was unhittable.
Yeah, Devin Williams. I'm going to go with Jake Cronenworth. I got a chance to see him on an everyday basis really come in as a guy looking to make a team and having such a good spring that he makes the team. And then because of some injury early, he gets to play some first base, and that really opened the door for him to move into the second base position, solidify that spot, and really be one of the catalysts that made this Padres offense such a deep offense. I like him to win it. I think he was there from day one, and I'm always going to give it to a guy who's out there every day as opposed to maybe a reliever. All right, that does it for our season awards. We're going to move into some hires and some John Heyman's insider here in a sec. Let's start with the one hire that has taken place since our last show, and that's Tony La Russa being hired by the Chicago White Sox. This has caused a little bit of noise around baseball, especially in the Chicago White Sox organization. John, what are you hearing on the Tony La Russa? Did you like the hire?
Well, I'll say this. It was clearly the owner's hire. Jerry Reinsdorf had told everybody that this was his greatest regret in sports, and that includes breaking up the Bulls, you know, who won six championships. You know, I guess maybe you don't have a regret because you've already won six championships. Fantastic. I don't know. But firing Tony La Russa in 1986 and sticking with Hawk Harrelson as your GM when the two of them weren't getting along is the greatest regret that Reinsdorf ever had. Maybe the regret part of it was sticking with Harrelson, who was a fantastic announcer, but what a terrible GM he was. So I understand the regret. It's a long time ago. La Russa clearly was deserving of the Hall of Fame. I think this is a gamble. We'll see. I think people in the organization aren't necessarily thrilled. That doesn't mean it's not going to work out. We're going to see if he's going to relate to the young players. That's a question. He's had some controversial opinions about kneeling and things like that. And, you know, I've got my questions. Very smart guy. He still got it. But he was at the forefront of the numbers game. I mean, he didn't call it analytics, but he was into it. So and he speaks Spanish, too, which is a plus with the, you know, realistically, core of that team, much of it is Latin. So there's definitely some big pluses to it. But to me, that's a gamble. I probably wouldn't have taken.
Yep, it is certainly a gamble. Anytime you bring somebody who is as strong-minded and opinionated as Tony, obviously his baseball acumen is really unmatched. Nobody questions that part. But in terms of being able to relate to a young locker room, we're going to have to wait and see it. And it is a bit of a risky hire. John, let's jump into your insider. A lot of baseball news here as we start to get into free agency. The list of Red Sox manager candidates is down to five: Sam Fold, James Rosen, Don Kelly, Carlos Mendoza, and of course, Alex Cora. We've talked about this for a couple weeks. It seemed as though Alex Cora was the clear front runner. Does that remain the same?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm not privy to their conversations. I did report the five in the last couple of days. It's certainly an excellent group. Albeit very short on experience other than Cora. You know, some people are just saying, well, what's Cora's interview? He lays down his World Series ring and that's it. I don't know. You know, he does look like the favorite here. We know that the ownership is in favor of Cora. We know that they were almost tearful when they let him go after the suspension. I do think their star players, Bogaerts and Devers, liked him very much. I think the fan base generally would like to see Cora back. There is a little bit of, you know, some people were critical of A.J. Hinch being hired by the Tigers because of the Houston scandal. And, you know, there's a little bit of that with Cora. But, you know, I don't think that's going to be enough to overcome it. I'm going to be surprised if he doesn't get that job. Sam Fold has a connection to Tampa. He's a Stanford guy. He's from New Hampshire. So he certainly has a lot going for him. Mendoza, Kelly, Rousen, all extremely well thought of coaches. To hire somebody with no experience, and this goes for Fold as well, major league managing experience in Boston, to me, that's probably a risk. So, you know, the fact that Cora is the only one with experience, and not only experience, he won the World Series for them. You know, I think he's still getting it, but, you know, those are the five. It's not going to be anybody else.
Yeah, hiring a manager with no experience in Boston is certainly a risk that I don't know the Red Sox want to take. All right, the Angels. They've interviewed up to 20 GM candidates and have started calling people back. Mike Hill, former GM of the Marlins, is one of the names who got a call back. What are you hearing on the Angels front?
Yes, you're absolutely right. That hasn't been reported yet, but that is correct. Mike Hill has been called back and will be in that next group. About a half dozen guys will meet with Artie Moreno. The reason they were able to interview about 20, we don't know all 20, we know 14, which including Matt Arnold from Milwaukee, Billy Owens from Oakland, Porter from Arizona, you know, Bobby Evans, who was the Giants GM, Ruben Amaro was the Phillies GM, three guys from Kansas City, including Piccolo and Watson and Sharp, Dan Jennings from Washington. It's a long list of guys, but Mike Hill at this point is the one we know who has been called back. He's got the most experience of any of them, so maybe they do go with experience there. He certainly looks like a front runner. I can't say he's the front runner now, but there's going to be about a half dozen out of the 20. We don't know six of the guys, so I don't know. We mentioned Ned Colletti as a possibility on a previous show. I don't know if he's one of the remaining unknown six, the mystery candidates, I guess we can call them. We have mystery teams in free agency. Maybe they're mystery candidates, but Mike Hill looks like a favorite at this point, and we'll see. And the other ones, Logan White is another one who did great work with the Dodgers, drafting Seager, Kershaw, Kemp, Bellinger. I mean, his drafting was incredible, and he went to the Padres, and they have a resurgence. So I shouldn't leave him out. I think he's a pretty strong candidate, as well as Dan Jennings and some of these other guys who have interviewed. So, but Mike Hill looks like one of the favorites at this point.
Yeah, I love myself some Logan White, man. That guy can talk some baseball, and he can evaluate some talent. All right, let's move to Philly. They seem to be in no rush to find a GM. What are you hearing on that front?
Yeah, I think that, they looked at, what the reaction was from the fans, the fact they'd basically been about a 500 team for the last few years despite big signings, and then they fired their GM, Matt Klentak, and they promoted Ned Rice, who was under Klentak. So, it's not a major change, I guess, but, I guess they were satisfying the fans. It does feel like Ned Rice is going to get a chance here. I mean, very smart guy, had been with Baltimore previously. It's interesting, Andy McPhail has basically got 1 year to go, and he's basically said he's going to, it sounds like he's going to retire after the year. So they may have a whole new look, and we'll see how Ned Rice does, but it feels like he's getting a chance. I think I've heard connected to them interest, and no surprise here, one of our former guests, Eric Neander, who guided the Rays to the World Series, their GM. That's long-term, though. I don't think that's anything afoot with that now. I think Ned Rice gets a chance, and we'll see how he does. You know, you hear Theo's name connected. I hear Theo's name connected to Seattle. But I still think after Chicago, he's going to want to look at an ownership situation like Billy Beane is doing right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Six players in Major League Baseball got qualifying offers. Realmuto, LeMahieu, Bauer, Springer. And a bit of a surprise, Marcus Stroman and Kevin Gausman. What are you hearing in terms of them taking the qualifying offer or turning it down? Does Stroman have a chance to stay in New York?
Yeah, I mean, very interesting. We talked about this a few times previously, and we knew that Bauer, Realmuto, Springer, and LeMahieu would be getting that qualifying offer, and they all four of them surely will be turning it down. They can do much better with a multi-year deal, all big stars, Bauer, Realmuto, Springer, and LeMahieu, as I said. I was a little surprised by Stroman. We had Bob Nightingale on. He suggested he might get the qualifying offer. You know, it shows that starting pitching is still – and even in this, what's expected to be a very tough winter, maybe even a bloodbath, if you're a solid starter, decent starter, you may do okay. For a guy, Stroman, who was rehabbing an injury and then opted out, didn't pitch at all for the Mets. I was a little surprised they gave him the qualifying offer. They obviously need pitching. We don't know whether part of it is because we think Steve Cohn's coming in. Ultimately, Wilpon has to be responsible for this decision, though. He still has the team. That one surprised me a little bit. I think he's probably not going to take it. I have not felt like he's really wanted to be with the Mets. You know, he can dispute that if he likes, but my understanding is he had quite a volatile negative reaction when he was traded to the Mets in Toronto, and he wanted to go to the Yankees. He's from New York, so I don't know. He liked the Yankees better than the Mets, but some people in New York do, I guess. Gausman, I'm shocked. I never saw that coming at all. San Francisco made the right calls a couple years ago, or the year before, giving Bumgarner the qualifying offer. That was probably easy. But then giving it also to Will Smith, the reliever, and that paid off when Atlanta signed him to a three for 40. That won't be happening now with relievers. No, there aren't going to be relievers getting three for 40. So Hendricks didn't get one. The other guys we felt probably wouldn't get one didn't get it. Didi and Semien and Yachty didn't get one. There were a lot of Simmons. There were a lot of good players. Brantley didn't get one. It's a tough year. It's going to be a tough year, but it's a little bit of a tell that the starting pitchers, even though they throw fewer innings now, it's still four or five innings. It's still more than one or two. So they still have a big value. Stroman, I think, will decline. Gausman, to me, he's got to have probably working on a multi-year. They're going to figure it out. They obviously love him. Otherwise, he's got to just take it. You can't go on the market with a qualifying offer. As Kevin, no offense, he's not, everything I hear, a great guy and a very solid pitcher. But $19 million, that's a lot of money in this market. So
yeah, if he's not working on a multi-year deal, he 100% has to take that.
Exactly.
$19 million virtually is going to be unheard of in that market. All right. The four guys we mentioned, Realmuto, Bauer, LeMahieu, and Springer. What are some potential landing spots for those guys?
All right, I'm going to make a guess for all four, and it's mostly a guess. Other than LeMahieu, I mean, you know, he wants to be a Yankee, and that ballpark is perfect for him. So I'm going to guess he stays with the Yankees and gets 3 for $60. We shall see. That's a big raise, but you know what? He is an MVP finalist, deserving. He might even get more. I'm going to say Springer. I'm going to say 4 for $80. We're going to ask Bobby about Springer, also a great Connecticut athlete like Bobby Valentine was. I'm going to guess 4 for $80 in a different market. He'd probably do even better than that, but that'd be my guess. Terrific all-around player. I'm going to say he's going to stay in New England and go for the Red Sox, who are going to let Jackie Bradley Jr. Go somewhere else. That'd be my guess. Realmuto. I'm going to say, you know, it's a tougher market than, you know, I know he was looking for Mauer. I thought he wouldn't get that, but might get somewhat close. I'm going to say he gets 6 for $132. That's still a lot of money in this market. I don't know. Maybe I'm overshooting it. I don't know. I'm going to say Steve Cohn. And the Mets have no catcher, right? So, you know, this is the guy that he should sign. He could look at Springer. He could look at Bauer. But I'm going to say Realmuto goes to the Mets. And Bauer, look, the Giants signaled they have money. I'm going to say the Giants. I've heard that whisper for the Giants for Bauer. We shall see. You know, he's got personality quirks, and that may hold him back. He's a fantastic pitcher, incredible, great pitcher. I'm going to say he gets 5 for $150. I know that's only half of what his frenemy from UCLA, Garrett Cole, got, but I think it's just the market is tough. You know, I think his quirky personality is going to hurt a little bit. He may do better than that. That may be the baseline, but I'm going to say 5 for $150 Giants.
Well, that's all a lot of money at the end of the day. I will say the Bauer one is – so is Realmuto. 6 for $132 seems like a boatload of money for a catcher, especially when you're looking at Springer, who's looking in that 4 for $80 range there. Seems a little out of course, but we'll see how this works. It's going to be some questions answered as we get into this.
Yeah, I can't vouch for these predictions. They're just complete wild predictions.
Right.
No, you never know. You never know. But, I mean, that's just my guess.
You're not the only one predicting a lot of these numbers, so it's right on point. All right, Charlie Morton. He also will be in the mix. You know, he's had a lot of success pitching in postseason. His $15 million option was declined by the Rays. He might be a bargain for a team, John.
That's what I'm thinking of. I think this guy is a great big-game pitcher. I do hear he's leaning toward coming back and pitching. He had talked about maybe retiring, but at this moment, the last I'd heard is he's going to come back and pitch, or at least is intending to. You know, I wasn't shocked, as we talked about earlier, them not declining the $15 million, but to me, he's better than Stroman or Gausman, at least on a one-year deal. And, you know, some of it has to do with what market you're in. You know, Morton's in Tampa where they have no money, and Stroman is in New York and Gausman in San Francisco. So I think that's it. But You know, if somebody signs Morton for even for the 15 that he just got rejected for, I think that's a pretty good deal for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's going to help somebody next year, I think, without a doubt. Our last item to clean up, it was a bit of a shock, but the Marlins declined their option on Brandon Kitzler. He was one of their really bright spots on that playoff team. What is with that? Why do you think they let him go?
Yeah, not only bright spots, he got a case to be their team MVP. It's got to either be him or Aguilar. I mean, maybe somebody would favor Aguilar, but Kinsler was incredible. He also saved the games that they beat the Cubs. And, I mean, the guy knows how to pitch. He knows how to get people out. My understanding is they had discussion, and there were people who said he's just not a swing-and-miss guy. That's the thing. You know, you got to get people, strike out people. So he doesn't strike them out. He gets them out to me, but – you know, I don't even know if it's really a decision because the Marlins have no money. They don't have any money. They picked up the Marte option as we said that they would. And, you know, I don't blame them at this point. They had a rough time of it financially. They've done a very good job with the team putting together prospects. I mean, now they have Sixto Sanchez and Eduardo Cabrera, who's going to be a big pitching star, and Alcantara, Lopez. You know, they've really done a great job, but financially, they're in a tough spot, and they have no money. I think Kinsler should easily get the $4 million somewhere else off of what he did. In fact, I think he should get a multi-year. I know it's a tough year. I know there are probably 100 or going to be 100 free agent relievers. What a year this is going to be with all the non-tenders we're going to have to. But Brandon Kinsler, I think, is a fantastic pitcher, even if he's not a closer for somebody. A contender. He was a closer for the Marlins, and he got it done. So there wasn't justice there, and he'll find a job for similar money elsewhere, I think.
Yeah, that one always confuses me with the analytics we have where you can put defenses in the perfect spot. Why wouldn't you want a guy who induces contact to hit the ball right into those spots that you have your defenders setting up, and it just is a world of craziness to me. And you also want to keep pitch counts down. So it would make sense that you want a guy who's actually, you know, not necessarily have swing and miss stuff, but gets outs. I mean, isn't that the objective of the whole thing? I digress, John. I don't want to get into that too much.
I liked it. I agree.
That's going to do it for this week's episode of Big Time Baseball. Coming up next, we got Bobby Valentine coming on to talk with us, specifically some New York Mets stuff, and talk a little bit about the analytics. He's always been ahead of the curve when it comes to that stuff. We'll have him on next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.